And welcome to the Radio Times Regional Roundup. I'm Tracy Matisak in for Mary Cummings Jordan. Ahead this hour, Pennsylvania's groundbreaking clean slate law that's designed to give low-level offenders a chance to restart their lives. And later, it's the only drive-in theater in the country that still shows 35mm films, and the cars are lining up for an old-school night at the movies. But we begin with the imminent closure of Hahnemann University Hospital. It's been one of the biggest stories of the summer for our region, and now it's garnering national attention on the presidential campaign trail. Hahnemann is scheduled to close its doors by September, but the emergency room could shut down this week. The sudden announcement of the closure last month has sent patients, staff, and doctors scrambling and has set off a series of protests to try to keep the doors open. If the hospital's closure affects you or you've got a question, give us a call at 888-477-9499. Tweet us at WHYY Radio Times or email us at radiotimes@whyy.org. Meantime, WHYY's behavioral health reporter Nina Feldman has been covering the story. She joins us now in the studio with the latest. Nina, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start with the emergency room. Really, it could close down this week.
So that is what the hospital leadership has requested. Basically, they want to close it down because the hospital is the way that most of the patients are coming through the door. That's how Hahnemann still has most of its patients, is through the emergency department. And the longer the hospital stays open, it's a money-losing endeavor for them. And so shutting down the emergency room would essentially stop them from losing that money. So that's the most efficient and fastest way to do that. And the Pennsylvania Department of Health has confirmed that it's all right for them to stop accepting new patients starting on Wednesday. So that looks all but certain to happen. The clarification that's important to note is that the hospital emergency room will not be completely closed. If there are patients who are already in the hospital and need emergency services, there will be doctors there to take care of them. They won't have to be, you know, transferred to another facility. But for those who do, you know, present at the emergency room, walk in the door with an emergency at Hahnemann, there will be ambulances there, presumably to take them to another facility. So that's all but set to happen on Wednesday.
And this is really significant, Nina, because from what I read, something like 40,000 patients a year come into Hahnemann Hospital through the emergency room. So now you're talking about tens of thousands of patients that now have to go elsewhere.
That's right. So, you know, Hahnemann wound down its trauma centers previously, pretty soon after this news that the hospital was planning to close came out. And so that was already starting to happen, where patients were heading to Temple or other trauma centers in the region. And I think, you know, because of that, and because this has happened, albeit very quickly, but incrementally, you have the regional hospitals with a little bit of lead time to start running up, to absorb some of that patient spillover that they're going to get. So you have hospitals staffing up. You have hospitals saying, you know, we're going to anticipate higher patient censuses in our emergency departments, and we have to have the staffing to match that.
And I'm guessing that Temple and Jefferson will probably be the first ones in line because they're probably the closest, and also level one trauma centers, which I guess provide the highest level of care for trauma patients. So it sounds like they may get the brunt of it.
That's right. Yeah. And they've both said, you know, they're prepared for that. I think summer months are, you know, a high time for traffic to emergency departments. So I think it sort of remains to be seen what the stress on the other local emergency departments will be. But you know, administrations there at Jefferson and at Temple are saying, you know, we're ready for this. We anticipated this, so we're going to do our best to absorb what we can.
There was a bankruptcy hearing on Thursday. What came out of that? What's the latest?
Yeah, so the bankruptcy proceedings have been a lot of stops and starts. This is a very complicated case. So what we know so far from bankruptcy is the first stage was basically the attorneys representing the hospital trying to figure out the financing mechanism for them to be able to stay open for their last remaining weeks. That was approved essentially on Friday, and so the loan from their lenders was approved to be able to, you know, move forward and pay their bills essentially, and you know, pay those who are left on, remain on their payroll. So that was all squared away, although there was a lot of back and forth and fuss about it. And then and what's next to be determined is essentially the closure plan for the hospital. So the judge has to rule on whether that closure plan is acceptable. And so that'll have to do with the timeline that's laid out. And there are a lot of different entities that have opposed that closure plan. So it's sort of up to the hospital leadership between now and when the judge rules on the plan to try to get everybody on their side. So the people opposing or the groups opposing have been Drexel, which is affiliated with Hahnemann because Hahnemann is its main teaching hospital. You've had the city opposed. You've had the state health department opposed. You've had the accrediting body, which is responsible for accrediting the hospital to be a teaching hospital, voice some objections. So you have a lot of different parties that say, hey, wait a minute, closing the hospital this way, this fast is not going to work for, you know, our constituents, essentially.
Yeah. Speaking of groups that are opposed, there have been lots of protests going on over the last several weeks. You've been covering them. Bernie Sanders has now brought national attention to this. And the story is that he's supposed to be at the rally this afternoon. Does that help, Nina? Does his presence move the needle at all in terms of helping keep the hospital open?
I think it helps in terms of bringing a public eye to the issue, and he's really framing it as, you know, proof for leveraging this instance as an example for why, you know, his platform, his stance on Medicare for all would benefit patients and residents of Philadelphia. In terms of actually having an effect on potentially keeping the doors of the hospital open, I mean, every day we're hearing news of a different service sort of winding down its operations there. So there would have to be a really serious, I would say, sea change for the hospital services to kind of turn a corner and for that to stop. It doesn't feel as likely to me. Yeah. So, for instance, on Friday, labor and delivery stopped accepting patients. So no more babies will be, except for the ones who are sort of already in the pipeline, in, you know, ready to go at the hospital. No more babies will be delivered at Hahnemann. You know, I've heard reports from residents that I've talked to and attending doctors that say, you know, we can't perform certain, you know, procedures because we don't have the equipment anymore. So we have to send certain patients out if they need a particular surgical procedure. So the operations are really winding down.
Yeah. Bernie Sanders, among others, have alleged that the real reason that the private equity firm that bought Hahnemann last year is closing it is in order to sell off the real estate, that that's been sort of separated from the rest of the bankruptcy package, and that ultimately, you know, the real estate will be sold, it will be developed into some sort of luxury properties. Is that a fair assessment? Is there any evidence of that?
Well, it is true that the Chapter 11 bankruptcy filing does not include the real estate as, you know, in its assets. So, you know, that wouldn't have to be used as assets to pay back its, you know, its creditors. So there's something to be said for that. Although some of the objections to the bankruptcy filings are that those assets aren't included and that they should be. You know, I think it's hard to say what the intention of Joel Friedman and his company who bought Hahnemann is. It's also been reported that there weren't that many other interested buyers when he came in and bought the hospital. So maybe he was genuinely trying to see if he could get it into an operable status. But yes, the nurses union and then, you know, by way of them, Bernie Sanders have definitely said that the company that owns the hospital hasn't gone through or pursued all the possible avenues that they could have to actually, you know, stand it up on its feet, and that, you know, this is a pretty good backup option in terms of Hahnemann's location, sort of at the edge of Center City there, to be able to sell it off for real estate. So I guess that remains to be seen. We'll see what happens with the property to be able to see if there's anything to that.
Nina, you've been writing about the doctors, the residents, the patients, what's going to happen to everybody in this mix. And I do want to talk to you about the residents in a moment. But what about staff? How many layoffs are we looking at here? What's the ripple effect of this for the staff?
I think everybody's figuring that out. You know, companies are figuring out if certain staff members can be placed in other institutions where they have contracts. But, you know, Sodexo, which provides food for Hahnemann, did announce, you know, 150 or so layoffs, and you have a lot of hospital workers that aren't doctors or doctors in training that, you know, are responsible for keeping the operation moving every single day, that are definitely going to have to find somewhere to go. So it's not just people in the medical profession. It's a lot of people. And a lot of those folks have worked at the hospital for years and years. That's a lot of the people I talk to. You know, this isn't just a job for them. It's someplace where they felt a sense of family and a sense of community. And I was really struck by that, actually. You know, I heard that refrain over and over again as I talked to people, that they felt like they come to work every day for the people. So it really felt like a real loss for so many people that I've spoken with.
Yeah, and then the question is, where do they get absorbed? And is there enough space to absorb all of them? What about the residents? You've been writing about them, many of whom just got to Philadelphia right around the time the closing was announced. And you've written about how they will be absorbed to a large degree, I guess, by Tower. Can you fill us in on what's happening with them?
Yeah, so initially, it sort of seemed like it was going to be every resident for themselves. There are about 570 residencies and fellowships at Hahnemann that are through the College of Medicine at Drexel. So Hahnemann is Drexel's main teaching hospital. And it sort of seemed like, okay, everybody's going to have to, you know, with the help of their program director, figure out a new place to go. Maybe that'll be in a group, you know, all the internal medicine residents find someplace else to absorb them, or maybe it'll be one by one, you know, okay, there are way too many internal medicine residents to go to just one program, and so they'll have to sort of figure it out either on a local basis or regionally or really anywhere across the country who has space to take them. Then Tower announced or Tower, Drexel, and Hahnemann together announced an agreement where Tower was up for purchasing the residencies from Hahnemann.
Yeah. So it sounds like many of them will be absorbed in that way. We are already just about out of time. Stick around. Much more to come on Radio Times Regional Roundup, including the Clean Slate Act. Nina Feldman, thank you so much for being with us on Radio Times.
It's been great to be here. Thanks so much.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
You are listening to the Radio Times Regional Roundup on WHYY. I'm Tracy Matisak, in for Mary Cummings Jordan. Pennsylvania is leading the nation in helping people with criminal records clear their name. The new Clean Slate Act will automatically seal eligible criminal records so they no longer affect someone's ability to get a job, secure housing, or get an education. In fact, some 40 million criminal charges were eligible for automatic sealing as of early this month. Now, this law is the first of its kind and will likely serve as a model for the rest of the nation. We've got one of the architects of the legislation here in the studio with us, Sharon Dietrich, litigation director and managing attorney at Community Legal Services in Philadelphia, is here. We invite you to join the conversation. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, email us at radiotimes@whyy.org, or call us at 888-477-9499. Sharon Dietrich, welcome to Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
So lots of states have some sort of expungement laws on the books. What's different about the new law in Pennsylvania? And while you're answering that, maybe you can clarify if there's a difference between expungement and sealing. But what's different in Pennsylvania?
Well, to start, every state has something that allows records to be cleared. And in some states, it's called expungement. In some states, it's called sealing. We in Pennsylvania actually have both of those things, and they have different impacts on what happens to your record. So an expungement in Pennsylvania means that everything connected to your criminal case is destroyed. The data is removed from the database. The file from the court proceeding even goes into the shredder. Whereas if your record is sealed, then it's not destroyed, but most of the world does not any longer have access to the information. So for the purposes that you mentioned, employment, housing, education, hardly anyone will have access to that information. The primary source of information still existing will be for law enforcement if you were to get in trouble again. So until this point, virtually every state did expungement and sealing by the filing of individual petitions with courts, which then involved an entire court proceeding. It involved everything from payment of filing fees through going to court hearings through then the information needing to be redacted from all of those places in the databases where it existed. What's different about Clean Slate is no longer does an individual have to take any action if they're eligible under the law. Instead, a computer query is going to identify them as eligible, and it will, by computer, seal their case.
So they don't have to do a thing. This all happens by computer and after 10 years. Is that correct? After 10 years, if there's a conviction?
That's true for the convictions. If what you're having sealed is a non-conviction, you had a case where you were found not guilty or the charges were dropped, that will be done pretty much right after the case is disposed of.
So now the person who's in that situation doesn't have to jump through a lot of hoops to try to get their name cleared. This happens automatically.
That's correct. Although, as I'm sure we'll talk about, there are some barriers that some people may face. So we do urge people to take certain steps to make sure that they're benefiting from this law.
So, Sharon, you're one of the people who designed this law. What was it that prompted you to start thinking about this and taking steps toward trying to change the law?
So at CLS, my legal aid program here in Philadelphia, by far the most common reason people come in for employment-related help is because they have a criminal record. It was such an enormous and remains such an enormous barrier to employment that really our clients have voted with their feet by coming in to say, I don't need wage representation or discrimination. I need to get away from my criminal record. Yeah. So over the course of years, we've done more and more expungement and sealing-related work. But it was always clear that we weren't even beginning to meet the need that existed and the number of people that were eligible to get their records cleared. And our feeling about this has recently been confirmed by a paper that came out of the Michigan Law School that showed that in Michigan, only 6.5% of people who are eligible to get their records cleared there were getting that done within 5 years of becoming eligible. So we were searching for a way that we could be more effective and serve the greatest number of people, many of whom would never necessarily even know they had a remedy, nor have access to a lawyer. So using that goal, we came up with this idea.
Yeah, so it sounds like, to your point, a lot of people either didn't know they could do it and didn't have and or did not have the resources to be able to start that process for themselves.
That's
so this
correct.
Makes all of that go away. Talk about how it actually works. Who's eligible and how does the process work for them to, you know, have their records sealed?
So there are three categories of cases that are eligible. First of all, as I mentioned, the non-convictions, where a person had charges brought against them but ultimately were not convicted. And that even would apply to a case where there is a combination of charges on which the person was convicted and charges on which they were not. It used to be that all of the charges remained available to the public. But now, say you plead to a simple assault, but there was an aggravated assault charge against you, that aggravated assault charge will be automatically sealed. So pretty quickly after the case is resolved, that will be taken care of. If you have, secondly, the lowest level of criminal offense in Pennsylvania is called a summary offense. And that could be something like shoplifting, harassment, disorderly conduct. A lot of people don't even know they had a crime. Even having weeds that are too high in your yard could lead to a summary offense.
Wow.
So after 10 years, if your fines and costs are paid, that will be automatically cleared. And finally, misdemeanors, 10 years from the point that they have been resolved. Not every misdemeanor, but most misdemeanors, first-degree misdemeanors that involve crimes of violence, that sort of thing, are not eligible. And there are actually many complicated disqualifications. But in general terms, if you have a nonviolent misdemeanor, 10 years has gone by and your fines and costs are paid, all of this is going to be taken care of and you won't even notice that anything has happened.
So a couple of questions occur to me about that. One is, I'm thinking of the person who maybe has a shoplifting arrest from years ago, but not a conviction. That arrest can follow you around, even if you weren't convicted.
We represented people on a daily basis who were losing job opportunities for non-convictions. Sometimes, as you say, something that's not incredibly even dangerous if you were convicted of it. We've seen people rejected from work for the most minor possible offenses. My favorite story is a client of mine who once was fired for the summary offense of disorderly conduct, making a loud noise. We live in a culture in which employers, when they get something other than a criminal record that is quote unquote clear, say, I don't want you. There are other candidates out there. Good luck to you. So that shows that even the most minor things, including non-convictions, really tend to come back and hurt people, even though legally in many cases they should not.
Yeah, that's pretty alarming. And I guess the second question that occurs to me is that 10 years still seems like a long time. The good news is that the records get sealed, but 10 years seems like a long time to wait, especially if it's a pretty minor offense.
Agreed. I will say that a person who has a summary offense can actually get it expunged by filing a petition after 5 years.
And so define what a summary offense is.
Now, again, that would be like the shoplifting, the disorderly mm-hmm. conduct, something that is below the level of a misdemeanor. So you don't necessarily have to wait 10 years for that. You can proceed as people always have and file a petition and not wait for the 10 years. But currently, Pennsylvania law requires whether you file a petition or are getting clean slate, 10 years is the limit for eligibility for misdemeanors to be sealed.
Yeah. So the good news is that at least it does go away. The bad news is it might take longer than you might ideally hope for.
Correct.
Yeah. What's going on with around the rest of the country? It sounds like this law in Pennsylvania that you were so instrumental in bringing about is really beginning to serve as a model. What other states are looking at Pennsylvania and trying to follow in our footsteps, if you will?
Well, Utah passed the second version of Clean Slate this spring, and the law is actively or bills are actively pending in states like California, North Carolina, Michigan, and a good number of other states are considering Clean Slate as well. And there's a federal bill that would apply to federal cases involving marijuana primarily. Currently, federal law does not provide for any kind of expungement or sealing remedy. It's like the worst of anything. So if you're unfortunate enough to even have federal charges brought against you, you currently can't get those off your record.
Yeah. Wow. So much to talk about here. I am fascinated by the fact that this law had a lot of bipartisan support, which is increasingly rare in the world in which we live. Why do you think that people on both sides of the aisle seem to support this idea?
The employer community came out really strong behind this bill. And in particular, our prime sponsor in the Senate was Senator Scott Wagner, who ran against Governor Wolf in the last general election. So here was probably one of the few issues that the two of them agreed on. And Senator Wagner is fond of talking about himself as an employer. He has a big garbage removal business in central PA. And his point of view was that if records are cleared, you have created a larger job market for me to hire from, because then I don't face potential negligent hiring liability. And by the way, I know a lot of the people I've hired with records are really good folks, and it's crazy that this is going on. So based on that kind of a view, the Pennsylvania Chamber of Business and Industry has strongly supported the law, as well as its local affiliates and various conservatives, including Koch Industries, for instance. Part of it is their view on the impact on the employment situation. But I think part also is a libertarian sense that, you know, the government has gotten too much into people's lives, and having criminal convictions following one out of three American adults is just ridiculous.
I guess, Sharon, there is a flip side to this where an employer could make the argument, hey, if I'm going to employ someone, or if I'm going to rent an apartment to someone, and they have something criminal in their background, isn't it my right to know about that? What do you say to that concern that, you know, people who are in these positions have a right to know if the person they're dealing with has criminality in their background?
That basically the social science research shows that the more time that goes by without you committing another offense, the less likely you are to present any greater risk than anyone else. I mean, nobody you employ or rent for is going to be free of any, you know, a 0% chance that they would do something wrong. And basically, research has shown pretty clearly that once a person stays out of trouble, they're no more likely than anyone else.
What happens, Sharon, is there evidence yet to know what happens for people who do have their records sealed or expunged and are able to get back into the workforce? What happens for them? What kinds of changes do you see in terms of the income that they're able to earn and so forth?
The Michigan study showed that if somebody got their record cleared, their wages went up by 25%.
That's significant. That's huge.
And I can tell you from our experience of representing 1,000 people a year with criminal records that getting a record cleared creates an ability to just push through the door of unemployment in the way that no other remedy does. And our clients know that. When they come to CLS, they don't say, I want a lawsuit against an employer. They say, I want to clear my records so that I can get a job and keep a job. And people are so grateful when their records are cleared. It's the only type of case in which I've represented people that they cry when you succeed.
Maybe I wonder if you can share, you know, a story or two with us about someone, obviously without giving names, but really what it means to someone to have their record sealed or to have it cleared, you know, what that process is like trying to navigate life with that sort of hanging over you.
Well, the absence of that, having it hang over you, usually leads to deep uncertainty for some lengthy period of time when you're looking for work, but even after you've found it, because regularly employers do not finish with their background checks before people come on the job. And so you can be sitting in the orientation and suddenly there's a tap on your shoulder saying, sir, come with me, and now the job is over. Or you could have been working for 2 months and the background check finally comes back and you're taken away. So there's an extraordinary sense of fear about whether employment is going to come and whether it's going to stay. Whereas when you eliminate that, there's a real peace of mind in knowing that that's no longer going to be the case.
Yeah. And as you pointed out, there are benefits to business as well, to bring a lot more people into the workforce. Do we have a sense of the number of records that we're going to start seeing sealed every year, at least in Pennsylvania?
Well, I don't know that we know how many going forward are going to be sealed every year, but I can tell you how many we expect to be sealed that are already in existence. And that number is 30 million cases. So that is half of the database of the courts. And it has already gone into effect starting June 28th of this year. Those 30 million cases will be sealed between that date and next June 28th, going backward in time. So far here in Philadelphia, we've seen non-convictions sealed going back to 2012. So 2.5 million cases a month will be sealed until the end of that year. And then every year, more non-convictions will come off and more of those old summary and misdemeanor convictions as the 10-year mark approaches.
Those are staggering numbers.
That's what we were shooting for.
Yeah. So how does it work in the sense that does a judge sign off on batches of these records so that they can, you know, by computer be sealed up, or what's the trigger for these batches of criminal records to be sealed?
The Administrative Office of Pennsylvania Courts did a nice job figuring out how to implement this law. And basically, they send a list of 2.5 million names out to the 67 courts around the Commonwealth every month, which a judge who is in charge there of Clean Slate simply signs the order. I guess if they wanted to, they could look at the list. I don't know to what end. I can't imagine they are. So the judge simply signs the order, and that then triggers all the automated procedures that automatically seal up the records through the computer query.
What are the costs associated with all of this?
Remarkably low. I think that's another reason that this had a lot of appeal to our legislators. The fiscal note for the bill was $250,000. And I think that was the House bill. The Senate said it could be done for existing resources that the agencies had in their tech departments. So this is not something that's costing a lot of money. The downside is that we are not able to send notices to people that their cases had been sealed, because that would be a very costly thing. If you can imagine sending out mail to 30 million people, you start talking in the neighborhood of $30 million.
That gets expensive.
Yes.
We will be talking about the Clean Slate Law when we come right back on Radio Times Regional Roundup. Stay tuned, and we invite you to join the conversation as well. We'll be right back. Welcome back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
The Radio Times Regional Roundup. I'm Tracy Matisak, filling in for Mary Cummings Jordan. We have been talking about Pennsylvania's Clean Slate Law. It is a new law, and it is really the first of its kind in the country. It is likely to become a model for the rest of the nation. And the way it works is that for eligible criminal offenders, usually low-level offenders, they will automatically see their records sealed after a period of time. And so this is a way to allow people to remove the barriers that keep them from getting an education, from renting an apartment, from getting a job for that matter. And it also has enjoyed broad bipartisan support. So we have been talking with Sharon Dietrich. She is litigation director and managing attorney at Community Legal Services in Philadelphia. She also happens to be one of the architects of that legislation. We invite you to add your voice to the conversation. Perhaps you are eligible for something like this, or you just have a question about it. You can give us a call at 888-477-9499. You can email us at radiotimes@whyy.org or tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And Sharon, when we left off, you were saying that one of the sort of downsides is that there's not a way to notify people about their records being sealed because of the cost that that would add. I'd like to sort of pick up on that thought, because we were talking about the fact that generally the cost of doing something like this is less than the old way of having to hire an attorney and jump through a whole lot of hoops.
Yes.
But now the downside is that you can't notify people.
That's right. Fortunately, there are ways that you as an individual can try to figure out whether your case or cases have been sealed. The first is, for better or worse, the Pennsylvania courts have a website that puts all Pennsylvania cases right up there in public until they're sealed or expunged. And you can check yourself on that website to see whether your case has been sealed or expunged. Now, remember, this law is being implemented over a 12-month period. So if you have a non-arrest, say, going back to 2012, as I said, it should be sealed now. But older things will get sealed up in the months to come. So it could actually take until the end of next June. But you can go to that website and continuously check yourself to see whether your cases are showing up.
Okay. And do we know what that website is, where people can, or what to put in the search engine to find it?
Unfortunately, it doesn't have a real easy URL.
Okay.
But you can find it if you go to CLS's Clean Slate website, which is mycleanslatepa.com. And we have there not only a link to that site, but we have a great deal of information that guide people through how they can best help themselves with the Clean Slate Act, including how to check their own record.
So that is mycleanslatepa.com. That's Community Legal Services. That's where you'll find the link if you want to just sort of periodically check in and keep an eye on things.
Yes.
We do have a question here from Elizabeth, who says, it's my understanding that sealing does not hide the case type or litigants. It just hides the docs in the case. Is that correct?
No, it hides everything. As we talked about earlier, it won't hide it for 100% of folks who might be interested in your information, with law enforcement being the most common exclusion from the people who from the general principle that people won't get to see the case. But everything will be hidden once your record has been sealed.
So employers, landlords will not access it. Law enforcement can see it.
There is a glitch, let me talk about, that's important for people to know. Unfortunately, the FBI does not honor Pennsylvania sealing orders. And this is something that we're currently trying to work with. It's administratively complex to deal with. But if you are a worker who gets an FBI report regularly, beware that your FBI report is still going to show your sealed cases, at least at this point. So that would be primarily people who work with children, particularly school employees, typically the caregiving type jobs, and casino workers are another major category. You probably know if you get an FBI report because you give fingerprints to do that. But FBI reports are not available for the vast majority of workers out there.
Well, and that's an important point to note. Want to bring Ed into our conversation, calling from Lansdale. Ed, welcome to Radio Times Regional Roundup.
Just a basic question. Is there a matter of recidivism with these, you know, clearances of record, should we say?
Thank you, Ed. Great question.
The Michigan study looked at recidivism and found virtually none. And as I said previously, there, after a certain point of time, usually put at the 5 to 7 year mark, people who have convictions but have not recidivated tend to not get into trouble again. If they are going to recidivate, it's usually in the time immediately after the conviction. Recidivism is very high in the first year or two after a conviction. So that's part of the reason why expungement and sealing laws tend to have waiting periods for people to qualify.
Also brings up an interesting question about whether someone's criminal background can ever completely go away, living in the age of Google, where so much is still out there in cyberspace somewhere, be it a mugshot or what have you. So does that present a problem that, you know, Google is there, people can look things up?
You're right. Google is there, and you can't completely put the genie back in the bottle. And even in criminal record databases, there are sometimes residuals that don't get cleared up. I often describe this to my clients as when you have ants in your kitchen and you think you got them all and then one runs out from under the refrigerator. That's what an expungement can be like sometimes, because particularly commercial databases like HireRight or First Advantage that employers are paying money for sometimes fail to remove expunged or sealed cases. So there are small possibilities that you will hear about the case again. But in Pennsylvania in particular, because of really good administrative procedures that the courts have in place, it's not as big a problem as elsewhere. In terms of the Google problem, I would say that while it's not impossible that having your name Googled will harm you, it's not nearly as likely as when you get a background check, which is what employers and landlords are primarily doing because they want 50 state viewpoints. They want somebody that they think is a professional to do it. So while there's the possibility you could be Googled, that's usually not the way that background checking goes. And that's why we felt that this clean slate law would, while not perfect, still do a great deal of good for people.
A couple of questions from our listeners. Gwen asks, can your guests speak on how this affects people who move to different states and what are other states' policies on this?
Well, so far only Utah has a clean slate law. But for purposes of a background screening by those private commercial vendors who are doing most of the background screening in this country, it's gone no matter where you live. So if you're record has been clean slated. And if you have Pennsylvania cases that have been clean slated, you're in good shape. But unless you live in Utah so far, you're going to have to be filing petitions in order to seal records from other states.
Another question. This one is from Greg, who says, will cases that went through accelerated rehabilitation disposition be qualified for a clean slate?
They will if you've paid your court fines and costs.
Okay. So give us an idea what that looks like, Sharon. Mm-hmm. You've mentioned a couple times about making sure that all those fees are paid. So on average, what kinds of fees would people be looking at?
There can be hundreds of dollars that are associated with criminal cases, and particularly in older cases, sometimes the courts didn't try really hard to collect that money, and a lot of times people didn't even know they owed any money. So another thing that we suggest that people do to make sure that their cases are going to be eligible to be sealed is, if they have convictions, check to see whether the fines and costs have been zeroed out. That is also information that you can get on the court's website. And again, if you use the tutorials on our website, it will explain to you how to check that for yourself. So unfortunately, that could mean that you owe quite a significant amount of money, ranging from maybe $150 to potentially many hundreds of dollars.
And I would think, too, Sharon, that for many people, that alone is one of the barriers to getting your name clear, to getting your record expunged or sealed in the past, that just the sheer cost alone would be prohibitive.
That's correct. I mean, filing the petitions themselves can cost $150 per petition. So that's a financial consequence that we've eliminated with Clean Slate. But yes, it's certainly true that still having to pay off those fines and costs can be a barrier. The good news is that even if they are still owing now, and say your case became eligible to be clean slated, the minute that you pay them, the computer will pick that up and it will at that point clean slate your case.
I want to bring Rick into the conversation, calling from Warminster. Rick, welcome to Radio Times.
Oh, thank you very much. A quick question. I think a while before the break, it was mentioned that there were like 30 million records to be expunged. Was that a certain period of time, 1 year, 2 years, 5 years?
It goes back to the beginning of record keeping by the courts. So I think their database goes back to the 1968 period or so, maybe even before that, depending on the counties. So it does go back for quite a number of decades.
So that's quite a bit. And then every month and every year, there's more and more that are coming up for sealing. So, Rick, thank you for that question. Sharon, we were talking about cost just a moment ago and it being prohibitive. And I wonder, as you've watched all of this unfold and as you've worked with your clients through the years, the lessons that you've learned about what it is like for someone who does not have means to navigate through the existing system, or at least the system as it was until Clean Slate?
Well, there are numerous problems, one of which being people are not familiar with how to represent themselves in this type of procedure when they have no lawyer. So an expungement petition tends to involve a great deal of technical information, which I'm perfectly comfortable putting in there. And in fact, we created software in my office to basically grab that information out of the database and put it into petitions. But if you would be an individual trying to help yourself, you would have to figure out what is an OTN and where do I find it? And there are many pieces of data like that that are required. Then you'd have to go in to see a judge with a DA there who says whether or not the DA's office object to your case being cleared. And that can be a really intimidating and almost PTSD-producing situation when you've had already a miserable experience with this case and now you've got to come back and do it again. So we're quite happy that we're relieving people of those issues.
Question from Bernie, and this sort of goes back to the data being out there. Bernie says, what about data aggregators who vacuum up copies of existing public records of court records and sell that information to employers and anyone else doing a commercial search for criminal records? Won't this information still be out there? Is that a possibility?
It's a small possibility. And the reason it's only a small possibility is that the Pennsylvania courts came up with a tremendously simple yet effective solution to that problem, which is they send out a file to the people that they sell data to that they are required to run as a condition of getting that data. And that file essentially says you must eliminate the following cases that have been sealed or expunged. Mm-hmm. So, yes, if this data were still out there in the privately held databases, there would be a limit to the effectiveness of this. But we've seen the courts in the past do this in large numbers, and it has been effective. So the data aggregators will be required to remove it, and there will be legal liability if they don't. The Fair Credit Reporting Act requires people who produce criminal background checks to use the best methods that are available to them to get them accurate. And we have sued background check companies and data aggregators in the past, and we will do it again if they do not comply with the law.
Well, that was thank you, Bernie. That was a great question. Guy is on the line from Linwood with a question. Welcome to Radio Times.
Yeah, hi. I just had a question about a shoplifting charge for my son when he was 14. He's now 20. Would that still be on his record if the fine wasn't paid? And would it, if the process of getting it expunged or sealed, does that apply to that too?
It would be on his record if it has not been affirmatively removed by a filing of a petition, more than likely. I hedge my bets only because we lawyers do that. But the chances are very high it would still be on his record. It could be there as a juvenile case, which would mean that it would not show up for many purposes, but it might show up for some. Or if it's there as an adult case, then it will be eligible to be clean slated. But clean slate does not apply to juvenile delinquency adjudications, in which case I would recommend that your son look into filing a petition. I would say start by checking the database, going to our website and finding the URL. And if his case does show up, then it will probably be taken care of. But if it does not, ironically, he probably should be looking to find a lawyer and file a petition.
And Guy, are you in Pennsylvania? Oh, okay. He may have hung up to hear the answer to your question, but let's just give the website. Oh, are you there, Guy? Are you in Pennsylvania?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So, and that website again is mycleanslatepa.com. So that might be the best place to at least start and kind of see where things are.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, Sharon Dietrich, thank you so much for helping us understand how this clean slate law works, for the work that you have done to clear the records of so many people and make their lives a whole lot easier. Thanks so much for being with us to talk about all of this.
Thank you, Tracy.
Yeah. You have been listening to the Radio Times Regional Roundup. Our producers have been John Ahrens and Debbie Builder and Kelsey Hansen. Our engineer is Diana Martinez. I'm Tracy Matisak, filling in for Mary Cummings Jordan. And again, this is Radio Times Regional Roundup.